B-Pod Studios.
Gasper and Murray have scorching hot takes. Twisting your mind with Pat Celtics and Bays. They'll also talk socks and out-of-town things. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday.
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Gasper!
Murray.
Gasper!
The Tennessee Titans have come into Foxborough and defeated Tom Brady and the Pats 20-13 in this wild card round.
My guy Kyle Van Noy calling a revenge tour. Just play ball, Kyle. Running his mouth, giving us bulletin board material about his revenge tour. His revenge tour ended early.
I could kiss Logan Ryan for that. How's that humble pie? The Titans' ass taste, Kyle Van Noy. From the Town Fair Tire Studio, Gasper Murray here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. We're both here for a full show for the first time in forever. Also, for the first time in forever, Chris, the Patriots not playing on this weekend in the divisional round does feel weird. Something despite my doubts in this overrated team this year. Obviously, I had signed the declaration of doneness some time ago when they lost back-to-back Houston to Kansas City. I didn't think we'd be facing... even just a week ago, heading into wild card weekend, that night against the Tennessee Titans, that we'd be talking about the Patriots not playing divisional weekend. Again, I thought that they would end up losing to Kansas City, but I also thought we would get that game. Before we go forward, and finally, I got to actually hold your column in my hands.
Sure.
There was much talked about yesterday with your appearance on Felger and Maz that Tom Brady's preference has to be staying with the Patriots. What? What a change. What do you know, Chris Gasper? But before we get to this, I do want to go back to last week. I want to spend a couple of minutes on that loss to the Titans. I want you to give me your thoughts on how that game unfolded and how we're looking at Titans-Ravens tonight instead of Patriots-Chiefs tomorrow. Were you as surprised as I was that they ended up losing that game?
Yeah, I mean, I was. I mean, I thought it would be a close game. And the game sort of tracked the way I thought it would. I thought it would be played in the teens, close game, but I figured the Patriots would be able to pull it out in the end, and I figured that Ryan Tannehill would play the way that Ryan Tannehill played, which to me was not particularly well. Obviously, he had the third down throw, and he had the touchdown throw.
To the kid from Harvard.
Yeah, Fursker. That was, you know, really good. Those throws were great, but I knew that they would be able to make Ryan Tannehill look like Ryan Tannehill and that he would turn back into a pumpkin. What I didn't plan for was the fact that they would only be able to put 14 points on the board, 13 points on the board, and that they would get shut out in the second half. I knew the offense had problems, Jim, but I did not think, and even that whole time when it was 14-13 in the second half, and I even tweeted this, and look, I was dead wrong. I was looking at Mike Vrabel, and I'm like, what are you doing? Why are you so conservative? You really think you're going to win this game, 14-13? And he basically did.
He did.
They got the pick six at the end from Logan Ryan, but essentially they were able to do it. And to me, that was the most shocking thing, was just how feeble and inept at the end of the day the Patriots' offense was. And you know what? Brady knew it all along.
It was really a microcosm of everything wrong with this whole season in one night, including the defense. And I know that there's people who say, well, they still only hold them to 14 points. But I'm sorry, those two drives that were heavy on Derrick Henry, especially the one after the Patriots get stuffed at the one-yard line, they went through them like a hot knife through butter.
A 75-yard drive.
Yeah. It was less than 2 minutes. I think they faced one third down. Like, it was, they got absolutely croaked. And I just think that was a microcosm of the defense and them being overrated for most of the season. A lot of those numbers being pumped up from the first 8 games of the year where they were playing complete crap. And people were talking about them as, you know, an all-world defense and putting them in the same conversation as some of the great defenses of all time. And hell, even I fell into that because of how deep they were and how they were rotating guys in and out. But as the season went along and they were losing to some of the better teams in the league, specifically after they lose back-to-back to Houston and Kansas City. And I thought they were all right defensively against Kansas City, but still had trouble making stops when they needed to. It was just like, I don't know. Like, the numbers are being pumped up here. This isn't what they really are. And that came to fruition on Saturday night. And then the offense, I mean, them getting stuffed at the one-yard line, even maybe mix in a pass, like that was a microcosm of their ineptitude. Josh McDaniels sometimes outthinking himself. What was that third and one with Landon Roberts? It was like everything wrong with this team in one game at the worst possible time.
Yeah, no, I think that you're right. And I'll tell you, when I think about the Patriots defense, I think the biggest thing, and this is something that I wrote about too, was, you know, the turnovers kind of dried up. Now, they did get the one interception, Jaron Harmon. That was a classic Tannehill throw. I mean, what a gift that was. But then the offense can't capitalize on it. And that, to me, was a little bit of a death knell. But I think the defense, in a lot of ways, was put in an unfair position for this team, particularly as the season went on. The idea was not only did they have to prevent the other team from scoring points, but they basically had to generate points as well, whether it was the five touchdown returns they had this year on defense. There were seven non-offensive touchdowns, if you include the two block punts, whether it was setting the offense up, you know, inside the other team's 30 with some sort of turnover. It's like if the defense didn't do that, the team couldn't win. And that just was not sustainable. And so I look back on the first seven or eight games of the year and what was happening there with the turnovers that were being generated and what they were doing. And I just look at that and I say that was not a sustainable formula. Like, the Patriots didn't even end up leading the league in turnovers generated. They had 36, which is a really good total. But Pittsburgh had 38. But it's like the pace that they were on was like an all-time pace. Right. They were going to finish with like 40-something turnovers. You can't bank on that. And so I think that while the defense was very good, I think that they – and I still think, you know, I know people will mock me. I still think that they're on paper this year were the best defense in the NFL. But they weren't an all-time defense, and I think that their standing got inflated a little bit by all the turnovers they generated. And I don't think it was coincidental that a lot of those turnovers were generated against poorer teams and poorer quarterbacks earlier in the year.
Yeah, so here we are. I thought we'd get one more game. Again, I signed that declaration of doneness. I didn't think they were winning the Super Bowl or even getting there this year, but I thought we would get one more game. Pats, Chiefs, and given the Chiefs' sordid history in the playoffs, who knows? Crazy things could happen. I wouldn't be shocked that they ended up getting knocked off by Houston tomorrow, but of the four games this weekend, and we'll get into, I want to know what you think about some of these games this weekend. Of the four, I do think that game's going to end up being an unwatchable blowout. Houston, that Bills game between them and Houston last week, it's like, who wants it? That team stinks outside of Deshaun.
You know, we were watching that game because obviously the Patriots were up next, and I kept saying multiple times, I was in the booth with Zoe and Beadle and Bob Soucy, and I kept saying multiple times while we were watching that game, the NFL should just eliminate both of these teams. Both teams should be eliminated. Yeah. Neither team deserves to advance, deserves to win. Eliminate both of them.
All right, so now we move on, Chris, to the what I think is the most fascinating offseason in the Patriots history, and nonstop Brady watch.
Do you want back in? Do you want back in the Boohoo Brady crew? Do you want your membership reinstated?
Yes. But it depends. I don't know if you guys will have me, because I'm of the belief, if it's going to look like how it looked this year, I think they should go their separate ways. I think that Bill, and I think you believe this based on who you've talked to, Bill believes he can win with Jared Stidham or anyone else, and I think he wants to try to win with another quarterback. And if Brady's going to show up, even if he gets paid the way that he believes he should get paid, and I think so too, especially if it's going to be, you know, using the Drew Brees template, that the last deal he got, $50 million, 2 years, like, if that's what he's looking for, he gets that. I get it. He deserves that, even with the age. But if he shows up and the weapons don't really change and it's still Jacoby Myers, Mohamed Sanu, and the rest of the trash outside of Julian Edelman, well, I don't blame him if he's still going to have a bit of resentment that's going to be emanating from him like it was all year. And if he's going to show up like that, then I'd rather see him play somewhere else. I think he'd be rejuvenated. I think he'll get the best out of Tom Brady for a couple of more seasons. So there's part of me that believes they should go their separate ways, Chris, if it's going to look like how 2019 played out. So that being said, I now hold in my hand Tom Brady's preference has to be staying with the Patriots. Just a couple of weeks ago, this was the last of the options of the three, retiring, playing somewhere else, or coming back to the Patriots. You and just about anyone else had that as, like, first two, retirement, playing somewhere else, precipitous drop-off, coming back to the Patriots.
Correct.
Now it's changed.
Changed.
What the hell happened? What do you know that you can at least expound on?
Yeah, I just think that, look, the guy's a human being first and foremost, and I think personally and professionally, there are a lot of things that are appealing about staying here, staying in a place that you know, with an organization you've had a lot of success with. And if there are some changes made, you know, to your contract, if there's a commitment, which is something he's really been looking for since 2017. And if you have better talent around you, then it's more appealing than starting over in a lot of ways. I think, human nature is fear of the unknown, right?
Sure.
And I think this is sort of the path of least resistance for Tom. And I think traditionally in a lot of these contract situations, he's somebody he doesn't like. Things that get contentious, he doesn't like conflict, and I'm not sure he's somebody who really likes a lot of change. And I think that this is the easiest solution at the end of the day for him personally and professionally.
Hey, you write in the Boston Globe, Brady might be realizing the grass isn't greener in another locale. When he lists the pros and cons, both personally and professionally, the Patriots still come out on top. So all that this year was posturing, even after wins. I remember that Bills win in Buffalo where, you know, they win that game. It's a tight game. It's an entertaining game offensively, rough. And he had a bad game, and he shows up in that post-game press conference acting like his dog got shot in front of him.
Yeah, that wasn't posturing. That was his frustration. And, I would say the ones that stand out to me, Buffalo, Washington, and particularly Philadelphia, where they won the game. Yeah. And he pretty much stood at the podium and all but said, in your immortal words, F this team. I mean, that was pretty much what the message was. But you know what it was? I don't think that had to do with the contract as much as the frustration of, like, and I said this to Felger yesterday, he knew they didn't have enough, particularly offensively, and how limited they were, and that it wasn't sustainable to win this way. And Felger, for some reason, believes that he was supposed to give some insincere, you know, attaboy to, like, Jacoby Myers, and that would have changed the whole season, or some insincere, inaccurate seal of approval to the offense. No, he knew the offense wasn't good and wasn't good enough, and I think it was more that. Now, behind the scenes, the other stuff, yeah, there was a lot of, like, tough talk, and I was trying to find this, Jim. Maybe you'd remember this. Do you remember? I can't remember if it was an interview he did with Jim Gray or if it was something he did with the reporters, but do you remember him talking about Giselle? He's like, you know, my wife was 15 and she didn't know any English and she went here.
Oh, yeah,
and then
yeah.
He's like, you know, my wife was in Tokyo, and, you know, it was sort of some allusion to Giselle being able to adapt to these situations. And I think that was sort of his mindset at the time. Like, well, I can, you know, if she can do that, I can do that. But I think it's shifted a little bit now that the reality of trying to do that is sunk in.
Yeah, and I get that. Okay, change is, and people have change rage. I do. Everybody else does. Change can be a very difficult thing to deal with, so it's easier to stay. But I don't know how he is going to change in terms of his attitude, even if he got the money. And I think the years are more important than the money.
The years are more important than money.
And so even if he got that, if things aren't going to change personnel-wise, I don't see why his attitude would change. I really don't, even if it's just the safer and easier thing to do to come back with the Patriots and be under Bill Belichick. And you go on to right here. Brady's decision to stay won't be driven by money, but by commitment and appreciation. Again, the commitment, the years, I'm with you on that. The commitment will be measured both in length of contract and the quality of the supporting cast. The Patriots and Belichick have to do better than the assorted Matt LaCosses, Jacoby Myerses, and N'Keal Harrys. Classy of you, by the way. I just would have said, you know, the crap. Especially with Brady's BFF, Julian Edelman, turning 34 in May. And boy, the myriad injuries he dealt with this year. Ridiculous. You hear the, you know, that's the shoulder, the knee, and everything else he was going through. Sounds like he's has to undergo surgery. But Chris, is any of that going to change? And if I'm Brady, and you think about, you know, again, with his attitude this year, do you trust Bill Belichick to even select maybe a tight end in the draft and feel like he's going to get it right after what you had to deal with N'Keal Harry this year and how slowly he came along, and having to look at Jacoby Myers, an off-the-street free agent rookie, and say, like, is this where you're going to get me? While it might be the safer play to come back to the Patriots, I just don't know if it's still going to make him happy.
Yeah, I mean, it's
if they don't make any kind of personnel change.
No, there's risk there, right? And it's funny because we talked about this yesterday, and I said, how many times have we been down this road of, oh, I'll take less and you'll put better personnel around me?
And it never happens.
Like, that never works for him. But, I mean, again, I think there's a lot of relationships here. And here's the other thing I'd say. I think that both Tom and Bill are driven by winning. And if you're able to take the egos out of it, I mean, someone who would know said to me, you know, both of these guys fervently believe they can win without the other, and that's the type of competitors they are, and I agree with that. But at the same time, they're also both very intelligent people, and I think when they sit down and really think about it, yeah, from an ego standpoint, it's like, I don't need you, I could win without you. But it's like, well, wait a second, if we're together, look what we've done, like, we still have a better chance to win. And so if it's really about winning, I think that you put the egos aside and, you know, you run it back. And the biggest thing will be this for me: when Bill looks at the tape, what does Bill see? You know, because I quote AFC personnel director in there, and, you know, of a team that would have interest in Brady. And obviously, these guys can't go on the record with their name, because if they do at this point, that's tampering, because Brady's still under contract.
Right.
So that person has watched the tape and feels like Brady can still play. But what does Bill see when he watches the tape? Does he see a guy that's in decline, that can't play anymore, that's the reason the offense struggled? Or does he see someone who still gives him a really good chance to win if they upgrade the personnel on the offense, which I think Bill knows he has to do no matter who the quarterback is?
So it's been a bit of a change here in the last 24 hours. If you missed Chris's appearance with Felger and Maz yesterday, Chris Gasper of the Boston Globe, writing today in the Globe, Tom Brady's preference has to be staying with the Patriots. That's got to make it feel better, right? As we go into this offseason of unknown and nonstop Brady watch till mid-March, now sounds like Brady will be back when it felt like that was going to be the least of the three options.
Let me just temper that a little bit here by saying all it takes is one crappy offer or crappy phone call
to piss him off.
This thing could flip back the other way.
And here's the other thing, Boston. How you feeling knowing that had they won against Miami a few weeks ago, this 60-degree weekend that we're looking at here, that's good day drinking weather, huh? This is what you should be doing. You should be getting lubed up and ready for a divisional home game tonight against the Kansas City Chiefs. But you're not. And they're out of the playoffs for the first time ever because they lose on wild card weekend. Blech, slumming it on wild card weekend. We'll talk to you next here on Gasper Murray 98.5 of Sports Hub.
This is Gasper and Murray on 98.5 Sports Hub.
Tom, do you have a sense of whether you'll be back with the Patriots in 2020, and do you want to be back with the Patriots in 2020?
I love the Patriots. I mean, they obviously, you know, they got it's the greatest organization, and, you know, playing for Mr. Kraft all these years and for Coach Belichick, I mean, there's, you know, there's nobody who's had a better career, I would say, than me, you know, just being with them. So I'm very blessed, and I don't know what the future looks like.
All right, Patriots quarterback Tom Brady, after the loss to the Titans last Saturday night, being asked about his future. And it's going to be a lot of questions about Brady's future until this all gets figured out between now and March 18th, when the new league year starts for 2020. Reading Chris's column in the Boston Globe today. Gasper Murray, 98.5 Sports Hub. Tom Brady's preference has to be staying with the Patriots. A change here from part of Chris's column here. Brady didn't have a lot of options on the field in 2019. He should have options in free agency. But his preference, at least at the outset, is to return to the Patriots. Both Brady and the dynasty could get an extension. So that's going to make you feel pretty good, Patriots fans, after last week's ugly loss and this unknown with Brady. But like Chris said in the last segment, all it takes is a bad offer to piss him off and maybe go elsewhere. Of the teams that could offer him, you know, I still use that Drew Brees template. And what Rivers and Brees, who are also free agents, what they're going to get offered, you know, Brady's going to be looking at. And he should certainly get more than Philip Rivers. All that guy's ever accomplished more than Brady is making kids. Please. He's good, not great. He's like super Christian Bledsoe of this generation. Really is.
A new one? You have Hawaiian Tebow and super Christian Bledsoe.
Phil Rivers drives me crazy. He's got some balls to him. And, you know, going back 10, 12 years ago, he's been great in certain playoff games. But he's kind of overrated. A lot of stats. Either way, if I'm Brady, I'm not getting less than what he gets. What teams do you think could offer him that kind of money and would? Okay. Because I also think part of this would be, and why it's why I always say LA Chargers would be like right up top.
Yeah.
There's a PR standpoint to this too. There's a palatable PR standpoint in looking at Tom Brady if you're the Chargers and saying, all right, we're going to this stadium now that's being built in LA in Inglewood that we're going to have to share with the Rams. People don't care about us since we've moved to LA.
They're completely irrelevant, the Chargers are in LA.
We need to put asses in seats. We need to sell PSLs if you're Dean Spanos, the owner of the team. Well, Tom Brady in a star loving town is a star, the biggest star in the NFL, arguably, even at 42, going into 43. Well, that's going to put asses in seats. That's one of the reasons I think the Chargers would be interested.
Yeah, I put the Chargers near the top of the list. I think you're looking at the Chargers. I wouldn't write off Miami even with Chad O'Shea out and Chan Gailey in. I would say, let's see what happens here, how the season finishes with Tennessee. I know they're high on Ryan Tannehill, but Vrabel and Brady are really close, and I think Vrabel's not somebody who's going to sugarcoat the weaknesses of Ryan Tannehill, which I think were on full display in the wild card game. So I'd put those teams there. I would say a team even like the Las Vegas Raiders. You know, I don't think that Derek Carr has solidified his spot there with them. I think he's sort of a placeholder. I think they would kick the tires on Brady.
Feels like there's a lack of satisfaction there on behalf of John Gruden with him.
Yeah, and John Gruden likes veteran quarterbacks too.
Gannon was his guy.
Rich Gannon to an MVP. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, again, if you go with Gruden, Gruden sort of has his own system. Is Gruden willing to adopt the Tom Brady offense? Because that's another point that was made to me, was that, you know, is he going to get the Peyton Manning treatment when Manning went to Denver and essentially all they needed was a quarterback? And it's like, you show up, okay, we'll adapt to you, we'll run your offense, Peyton. I don't know. You know, I don't know if a team's going to be willing to change their entire offense for 2 or 3 years of Tom.
Yeah, you have some interesting quotes from one AFC personnel director, your source, this murky source here. Quote, I think at this point a lot of teams would have interest, said this personnel man. How could you not? Not just us, but league-wide. Anybody with any kind of question mark at quarterback would have to look at him. They would be crazy not to, even though he's 42. He's a better quarterback than most of the guys in the NFL, as you just said, speaking to this personnel man. Peyton Manning brought his own offense to Denver, and they said they would just adapt to him. That could happen, but it would take the right coach to do that. And I know that's like that's a big ask for a lot of teams, but
it
John
is.
Gruden's case, who I think is also thirsty to win and show that he still has it, because I still think, I mean, for me, there's that question. There's at least his first year when he's back with the Raiders, it felt like the game might have passed him by. A better year this year.
Yeah, they're actually pretty good this year.
But it's not like they ended up making the playoffs or squeaking in or anything like that. I think he may, desperate's probably the wrong word, but I think he might be more willing to look at Brady and say, like, okay, I can actually really win with him.
Yeah, maybe. The only thing I'd say about Gruden is he's kind of a control freak offensive coach. You know, he like yells at the quarterback and you want the offense run a certain way. So if you bring in Brady and you're running a system that's not your system, you're essentially turning it over to the quarterback. And I just don't know if that's in Gruden's DNA. I don't know. I really don't. But yeah, I think they'd be interested. Maybe Carolina. And Minnesota is still my dark horse.
Yeah, you know? Keep saying this.
Well, I'm just saying this because one of the things that was mentioned to me was, again, the Peyton Manning example of the team had everything but a quarterback. They needed a quarterback to put them over the top. And the Broncos knew that. When I look at the Vikings, it's kind of the same thing. Now, look, Kirk Cousins was awesome last week against New Orleans. But would anybody be surprised if he went out there and laid an egg today?
No, but I got to say that what he did last week.
Oh, it was awesome.
On that drive in overtime, with the bomb to Thielen, I thought was the biggest play of all.
Yeah, it's the biggest play of his career.
I didn't think he had that in him at all. I was waiting for him to turn it over or for that team to go quickly 3-and-out on that first drive of overtime, and it was anything but.
I agree.
He was awesome on that drive.
I was waiting for him to trickle down his leg, and it didn't happen.
Yeah. So, that one's interesting. And you've gone through their schedule next year. They only play like two games outdoors.
Yeah.
It would be a perfect fit. They are stacked on both sides of the ball.
The one thing I'll say on that, and this is why I still think it could happen, but Cousins in the last year of that deal, it's fully guaranteed. He does have a no trade. But if they sign Tom Brady, it's like, hello, the writing's on the wall. Is he going to sit there as a backup? No. And I think Kirk Cousins would have marketability around the league. So if they wanted to make that swap, I think it's possible.
Frank the Tank, you're first up here on Gasper Murray this morning. Hey, Frank.
Hey, boys. Look, Gasper, I completely agree with you. Felger's got to get off his high horse with the OTA thing. They won the Super Bowl when he didn't show up. So, dude, you lost. The argument's over. Let it go. two things about the team and then Brady real quick. Look, I can't believe that they lost to two straight S-bag teams in a row and completely just – I mean, that's what Miami and Tennessee are. They're a couple of S-bag teams. Caught the Patriots on the right day, and granted, it's the Patriots' fault. They should have, but didn't. But, you know, I completely blame Belichick for this one. He shouldn't have been out on vacation. He should have been off his ass doing something to get Brady a tight end, better wide receivers, because in my opinion, the defense was decent enough this year in order for them to go all the way. So, to me, I think Belichick holds a lot of the blame, if not all of it, for the way that the team was set up this year. And as far as Brady goes, I mean, if he ends up going somewhere else, that is going to be the single greatest sports tragedy in the history of this town. There is no way that dude should be wearing a different uniform. He should be a Patriot. He should finish it no matter what it costs. The team and the guy has to finish his career here. That's just my opinion.
Thanks, Frank. I had been that. I just, this year was such
Come on back. Come back. You're welcome back. Reapply. We'll let you back in.
This year for him.
You can come back.
And for me personally, I don't know, like, I'm not,
everything that they do is the right thing, and Bill we trust, and it's Bill Jong-un, and, you know, he plays 18 holes and shoots an 18. I'm not that guy. I've never been that guy, and it's not like I've been tainted by Felger and Mets. It's just how I've been as a fan.
It was a joyless slog of a season for Brady and for me to watch them. It really was. And if it's going to look like this, and if he's going to be miserable, like, I'm Tom over team, ultimately, so I'd like to see him ride off into the sunset, you know, being rejuvenated, because I still think it's obvious he can still play. Yeah, he was banged up towards the end of the year, but if it's going to be like this, I'd like to see what Bill can maybe do with someone else, and I want to see Tom rejuvenated and see if he can win one more with someone else.
I find your position a little nebulous. Like, I'm trying to get, so is it like you just want the best for both parties, or you feel like Tom's better off somewhere else, or you feel like Bill can win without him? Like, what no, is
I
driving
don't.
Your position?
Here's, I don't think Bill could win without
okay.
him. So that's part of it. There is a spite factor there.
Okay,
You know, all this Jared Stidham talk recently. And even in the preseason, how some in the media cartel are, you know, trying to shove this kid down his throat, and I've never seen, this is the best any rookie quarterback's ever looked in camp, and this is, like, enough with the Jared Stidham stuff. Once he got onto the field in a regular season game for a few minutes, he threw a pick six to Adams, and it went the other way and screwed a bunch of Patriots gamblers, by the way. A lot of rightfully angry people that day. So let's calm down with Jared Stidham. I have my doubts. I do. Okay. And I know, you know, I don't want to go back to the Cleveland years of Belichick, but he really didn't start winning until he got the right quarterback. Right. So I don't know. He had the winning scratch ticket with Brady. You got it right. And good for you. And he made a lot of very difficult decisions. And, it's for those that are too young to remember, to put him in and go with him over Bledsoe at the time, that wasn't the easiest decision to make.
No, definitely not.
Going back like 20 years ago.
That took a lot of temerity and conviction.
And his coaching abilities, they shouldn't be doubted. What he's gotten out of guys like John Simon, Kyle Van Noy, he takes, you know, your lump of coal and shines it into a diamond. Like that, he is better than anybody else I've ever seen in my life. But his personnel decisions, especially in the last 3 years, and if I'm Brady and I see how he's drafted, you don't even get me a tight end, you had no succession plan after Rob Gronkowski, like, how's that? I don't think that that's going to change. I don't think that's going to change next year. So I'd be looking for both to go separate ways. That's just how I feel about it.
But, you know,
point.
You say it's not going to change, and I know we're up against a little, but remember 06 when he didn't have enough weapons? What did he do in 07? He went out and got Stallworth, Moss, Welker. 13, they didn't have enough weapons. They bring in Brandon LaFell. So, like, he's his history says that if they have a year where it's clear to him they don't have enough, he'll go out and try and improve the offense.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're not buying it.
I'm not. Not after this year. And what? You select a wide receiver in the first round ever, and you take N'Keal Harry over all these other guys? This is what's going to get real annoying, if it isn't already, because DK Metcalf lighting it up against the Eagles last week. Rookie wide receivers are making an impact in the playoffs, except for one. Huh. Oh, that's right. Yeah, N'Keal Harry. Okay, more of your calls. We got two open lines. You want to join us talking about the Patriots' future and Brady's future. Got to make you feel good, though. If you haven't read it in the Globe today or online at bostonglobe.com, Christopher L. Gasper, that's L for Lee, writing Tom Brady's preference has to be staying with the Patriots. Your thoughts at 617-779-0985. Back after this.
Stay tuned for more Gasper and Murray on 98.5 The Sports Hub. You're listening to Gasper and Murray.
Fantastic chemistry.
98.5, The Sports Hub.
When I look back over all the stuff that Kraft told me Saturday night before the game, that was easily the thing that stood out the most. Basically, I hope and pray that Tom plays for us next year, or number two, that he retires. And that's not what Tom Brady wants, I can tell you that much. He might play for the Patriots, and if he does, he'll go back willingly and I think happily. But he definitely, I mean, unless nobody wants him, unless there's not any one of the 32 teams that want him, he's not retiring. He's made it very clear to me that he's playing next year. So we'll see what happens. But again, Mike, I just think, just my gut feeling, if I had to guess right now, I think he's going to play somewhere else in 2020.
All right, so that was Peter King with the Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio earlier this week. That's his gut, and that's a big gut. So that's a big feeling on where Brady's going to be next year. Somewhere else. Chris Gasper disagrees, writing today in the Boston Globe, Tom Brady's preference has to be staying with the Patriots. Gasper Murray, 98.5, a Sports Hub. We'll go to Cam in Taunton on Tom Brady. Hello, Cam.
How's it going, guys? And also, I mean, if Brady goes to the Chargers, I never heard anyone mention this. How about Brady and LeBron in the same city if he goes to L.A.?
Oh, that's a lot of star power.
Yeah, interesting.
But ultimately, this is what I ideally think is best for both sides. Kraft, bring both sides to the table, bring Brady and Bill to the table and say, guys, let's work on something. Let's get this done for two more years. Because then you have 1 year left on Stidham's rookie deal for that fourth year, so you can see what he is then. Pay him fairly, surround him properly, go get LBJ, go get O.J. Howard, and go for it. Don't put one foot in one door and one foot in the other, because you've been doing that for 2 years and it hasn't worked. Pick a direction, stick to it.
Thanks for the call, Cam.
I agree. Cam's right about that. That's a really good point in terms of, you know, pick a direction. And that doesn't mean teams always have their best laid plans. Like, for example, if Brady gets hurt and Stidham comes in and plays like lights out, like Brady did when he usurped Bledsoe, then go ahead, you know, make the change. Like, no one's saying that making that commitment means that Brady's the guy. And I think Brady and his people have always thought at the end that, you know, his career will end here the same way it started. So that's fine. And you have a decent backup, I think, instead of a kid that you like. But this whole thing of going like year to year and putting Brady on notice every year about, well, maybe we'll bring you back if we don't think you're too old, it's not a great plan.
Did this whole thing start with his, you know, whatever Tom's bad feelings are towards how this has been handled? Did it start with that deal a couple of years ago where it was, what, 18 and all those incentives that he never reached?
I think it started
off the MVP season.
I think it started before then, to be honest. And I think it started even before he sort of won the MVP. Obviously, you had the Guerrero stuff. You know, I think somewhere in there is Deflategate, not loving how that was handled by the Crafts and Bill dumping it in his lap. But I think, yeah, I mean, sort of after the 17 MVP season, when you're sort of campaigning to get a pay raise and an extension and you want a multi-year commitment and you get a giant stiff arm and it's like all these incentives, that's all you get. And then you end up not reaching any of them. And then again, you're trying to get some clarity in your situation. You want an extension, you know, beyond what's left in your contract. And it's sort of another stiff arm wanting to go year to year. Bill prizes the ability with him at this point to go year to year, that flexibility. I think that means more to Bill above anything else is the idea that we're not locked into this quarterback who's in quote unquote uncharted territory.
Tom in Quincy on Tom Brady and his future. Go ahead, Tom.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Hey, how are you?
Hey, as awful as this season was, which it was, you know, very, like you just said, very unjoyful, I guess you could say, right? There's one thing that aggravates me more than how the season ended up, and it's the fact that every single time that Brady's name is mentioned about any kind of off-season contract, the comp is Philip Rivers. Like, Philip Rivers and Brady should never be even mentioned in the same breath. The only thing that they have in common is they play the same position. Like, that guy is a lifetime choke artist. So when they're telling me that Rivers and Breeze and him are the big free agents and actual teams would consider signing Philip Rivers to more money than it would take to get Tom Brady makes me nauseous. I don't understand this narrative of this. I don't get it. Philip Rivers is washed up.
Oh, Tom, I'm with you. The comp is because of the age,
yeah,
the position, and a couple of years ago, he had an MVP caliber season, the year they ended up coming here and losing the divisional,
yeah,
round 2 years ago. This year, he did suck. And overall, I'm with you, Tom, and Quincy. Like, he shouldn't be in the same breath with Tom Brady. He's had a couple of flashes. He's had a couple of decent playoff games. He's tough. Remember, going back to 07, coming here, AFC Championship game on one leg.
No ACL.
And very, boy, is he fertile. Just, I mean, it just keeps making children. I think he's up to 17 now. But they shouldn't be in the same conversation. But if you're a team, like, there's fits for him if you want a veteran quarterback.
Yeah,
and you
indeed
feel like you're, yeah, Indianapolis immediately comes to mind. I think that'd be a good fit for him.
Carolina.
Some team, and again, just look at some of the dumb moves that have been made by GMs throughout the league. Someone's going to pay him. He might get, you know, 25 guaranteed for 2 years. He's got 4 years, I think, on Brady. So someone's going to give him that kind of money. That's the comp. It's the age. It's relation to the age and the position, and it's the most important position.
I mean, do you feel like Breeze is a fair comp?
I do, and there's only a difference of a couple of years there, and I think Breeze is actually, I don't think
he's played better the last couple of years.
In the regular season, yeah, like, I think Breeze kind of has showed his age or something. He's gotten real tight in these playoff games in these last 3 years. Like, I thought he was kind of borderline terrible against Minnesota last week.
No, he wasn't great. He wasn't great. And then, of course, he threw the pick last year in the game against the Rams. So, yeah, I mean, but I mean, look at his numbers. They're still strong. I would take Brady over Breeze any day of the week. I'm just saying, I think that's a fair comp.
Can you imagine, though, living like Philip Rivers? I get it. He's, you know, he's very religious and they, you know. Once it's in and she says she's pregnant, you're going to have that kid. But, like, I would be terrified. Like, I just, like, you can't even have sex with your wife. You're just going to end up making more children. How many more? you have your own team now. Don't they have a team? Don't they have 11? Aren't there 11 Rivers?
I don't know how many kids he has, yeah. But at least he has the means to support them all. So, I mean, that part's good, right?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he's
at some point, it becomes a drain on the world and our resources. Just, like, stop, dude. Get the...
I'll tell you what. If that family just believes in one big bag, we're all in trouble.
That's very true. Matthew in Bridgewater on Tom Brady. Hello.
How you doing?
Good. What's up?
So I was just wondering a little thought process I had. What if Brady retires and the hiring back as a quarterback coach?
I don't think he would want to do that.
I don't think coaching is really something he's going to end up doing, at least not right after his career ends. I can't really see that.
No, it's still about trying to get TB12 and that brand off the ground more than anything else.
Yeah, he wants to prophesize that whole thing, you know, with an almost like religious fervor, speaking of, you know, religion and all that. So, I mean, I think when you look at it, that's not, I mean, he's going to play. That's the funny thing. Like, all year long, you guys on Felger and Maz were asking me the options. And if you recall, like, I mean, I had retirement up there pretty high. And now that's like off the table. And we've talked about this before. It seems like he must have some sort of understanding. He must have reached some sort of detente with G that's like, okay, I can play. I don't know if it's 1 year to whatever. There's something going on there with his family. So to be able to say he's going to keep playing. So retirement, I mean, do you hear anybody saying retirement?
No. It feels like that is 100% the least possible option for Tom Brady this offseason.
I mean, maybe somehow if like the Patriots disrespect him and there's no other suitable situation, he just packs it in. But I can't see that. I think the guy still wants to play.
Yeah, I think he still has football left in him. And that's, you know, his words verbatim in talking in the post game last week. And I think the other thing is, like, he still has to help promote that brand. To promote TB12, the talk has been, I want to play to 45 and the pliability and how this is a life-changing type of thing you can do with your body.
It's revolutionary.
Yeah, you have to keep trying to you have to keep playing to promote that brand. I think that's important. And I do believe there's been a change with him and the family, and specifically his wife and Super G, Gisele Bündchen. And I think part of it, too, comes from a positive place. It's not like she's just acquiesced or just is like, I'm sick of this stupid game and stop talking about this. As the old saying goes, Chris, like, stand by your man. Maybe she looks at, you know, she hears Tom and his complaints and how he maybe feels not disrespected, but
marginalized.
Yeah, marginalized by the Patriots here in recent years. And this is like, no, you go out there and you show them. I support you. I have your back. That kind of thing. You know, like, I can't imagine that she wouldn't want to support him. And if he still wants to play, even if she looks at football as dangerous and stupid and anything like that, if he feels that strongly about it and he feels wronged, well, any good woman's going to have her man's
back. Yeah, and you probably know, like, just being in a relationship, whichever way it goes, you know, if the other person has a real passion for what they're doing and you contribute to taking that away from them prematurely, that's not healthy for your relationship. They're going to resent you, whether that's, you know, the woman who has a career and you take that away from them, or it's the man, or wherever, or however it works, you know, in any sort of relationship, no matter how it goes. That's sort of part of being in a relationship. You know, the idea that you have to support your significant other and that you want to not take something away from them. You want them to be able to feel like they can still do that thing that they treasure.
Yeah, it also helps that he bought her a house in Greenwich, Connecticut, too, so she can be closer to New York. The more I think about that, Chris, I think that's part of the horse trading going on here, too. Fine, you want to keep playing your stupid game? I want a new house. I want to be close to New York. All right, fine.
That's good for them from a total family standpoint, because think about, you know, his oldest son. Where's his oldest son located?
In L.A., right? Oh, he's now in New York? Oh, why did I think he was still in California?
Because where does Blue Bloods film?
Oh, in New York. Well, I guess New York. I'm guessing there because I don't watch these terrible CBS shows.
You don't watch these shows?
No. What are you, 70? Like, who watches these CBS dramas? Jesus, you have bad taste in certain stuff. Great taste in clothes and other things, but you watch the
worst
crap.
You're missing out
crap.
On Blue Bloods.
Ugh. Do you Mad Matlock's not on anymore, too? Jesus. All right, when we come
Murder
back...
Murder, She Wrote's awesome.
when we come back, as of this hour, Josh McDaniels, I believe back home, so here in New England, not the coach of the Cleveland Browns, felt like it was headed that way. What's going on there? And Joe Judge, I have some thoughts after his press conference. Joe Judge all of a sudden went from special teams / wide receivers coach of the Patriots to the new coach of the New York Giants. I have some thoughts there as well. We'll get to that and more of your phone calls on Brady's future here on Gasper Murray, 98.5 of Sports Hub.
This is Gasper and Murray. You will listen. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
I want this team to reflect this area. I want the people that pay their hard-earned money in the neighborhoods of New York, North Jersey, South Jersey to come to our games and know that the players on the field play with the same attitude they wake up with every morning. That is blue collar. It's hard work. It's in your face. We're not going to back down from anybody. We're going to come to work every day and grind it out the way they do in their jobs every day. And they can invest their money in our program knowing it's worthwhile. They put a Giants uniform on. They put a Giants hat or jersey on. That it's not representing just the 53 on the field, but it's representing their neighborhoods, their communities, and their families with the values they have instilled in their children.
Really, Joe Judge?
Yeah. Really, Joe Judge. WFAN feels a certain way about him. We'll get to him in a moment. Gasper Murray, 98.5 Sports. I do want to remind you, though, Toucher and Rich, 98.5 Sports, up in the Boston Bruins, present Pucks and Paddles Friday, January 17th at Royale. It's the annual ping pong tournament that benefits the Floating Hospital for Children at Tufts Medical Center in the Boston Bruins Foundation. Continue bidding to play with any Bruins player or with Toucher and Rich until Monday at 2 p.m. So get on it if you want to play. To bid, go to 98.5sportshub.com. Pucks and Paddles, presented by Coors Light and sponsored by Honda, ACP Facility Services, and Clear Path for Veterans of New England. All right, so that's former Patriots special teams and wide receivers coach Joe Judge, who got formally introduced a couple of days now as the new head coach of the New York Giants, Chris. Already a lot of talk about the speech, how much he sounds like Bill Belichick in regard to the culture that he wants to build there, finding the right roles for players. A lot of Giants fans I've talked to and seeing on Twitter. My buddy Sean Marash, who works for WFAN down in New York, I mean, they're ready to run through a wall for Joe Judge. But you just hear that cut that we just played there, and
yeah.
He is so corny. Are you trying to head up their marketing department in New York? Are you trying to be their head coach? And that was just a portion, but the thing was a half hour long. And to me, it already reeks of, you're trying too hard, buddy. It feels like Joe Judge is already well on his way to being another failed branch of the Belichick coaching tree. I don't know how much you heard of this or saw any of the clips.
It just I did see some
like,
of it.
It felt like he's already too much of a tryhard.
Yeah, it felt a little collegey to me, and I actually thought before he got this job that he was going to take the Mississippi State job. I thought that was a really good fit for him as somebody without any head coaching experience. He's really had like a meteoric rise. He's well respected there. He's been well respected there for a while, and I know Bill's big on special teams coaches getting opportunities, and people respect him. But there's a lot that goes into being a head coach, and it's not just X's and O's or dealing with the personalities of people with your team. It's also dealing with your general manager, it's dealing with the media. I don't know. I mean, I look at it and I just find it sort of hard to believe that this was the best the Giants could do. And look, Joe Judge might prove me wrong. There's no question about that. But when I look at this, I just feel like the Giants like hiring coaches that will kind of fade into the background. You know, they like hiring coaches that are like basically, you know, manila envelopes. Like you're not, they're there, they're useful. You're not going to notice them.
Well, it's a nice way of saying it feels to me like Dave Gettleman wants a yes man. Like some of them,
kind of. I mean, you look at it, but I think it's not just Gettleman, it's the Maras too. Like they don't want some Bill Parcells or Bill Belichick type figure overshadowing the franchise and stomping on the sidelines. They want somebody who's going to sort of fall in line, and they want that separation of powers between the GM and the coach, which I understand that's what you want, but it hasn't worked for you. So, and you're the New York Football Giants. This is the best you can do?
Yeah, so John Mara, the owner of the team, has come out and admitted that the Giants moved fast on Joe Judge because, as you mentioned, Mississippi State was after him. Is that something you actually want to put out there?
Like, no!
I feel like that's a bad PR move. Like, the college team where he was an alum, they were really chasing him, so we had to move. Did you really go through a true vetting process? Maybe you wanted to maybe meet with Josh McDaniels so you can help your young quarterback that you drafted sixth overall. Like, I don't know. I might want to think that you would maybe want to interview a few more people, but nope, Mississippi State was about to pounce, so we had to get Joe Judge. Like, if I was a Giants fan, that would shake me to my core. It really would.
I don't know. I mean, I wish him the best. Look, there are guys that take – what did we know about John Harbaugh before he became coach of the Ravens? We didn't really know anything.
True.
And it's rare for these special teams guys to get a chance. You know, I'm happy to see that, but I will say this, too. I will add this element to it, because we haven't really talked about this. The startling lack of diversity in these hires across the NFL, I can tell you that there are a lot of minority assistant coaches, personnel people around the league that are looking at this, and they're like, Joe Judge, he gets to skip the line? Like, he's ahead of Eric Bieniemy?
Well, so that's, if I'm Eric Bieniemy, who I thought should have been, his name should have been ringing out more last offseason. And he's been successful under Andy Reid. And you see how successful some of those guys like Doug Peterson and even Matt Nagy in Chicago have been down year last year, but still got the best out of Mitch Trubisky a couple of years ago. They make the playoffs. That tree has been pretty successful. You know, I would think Bieniemy would be a better candidate than some of these guys. Like, well, again, Joe Judge, who are you? Special teams and what, wide receivers coach for the Patriots this year? How'd their wide receivers look? Like,
I know. Exactly.
So if I'm Eric Bieniemy, more than anybody else, of any African-American candidate, I'd be BS. I really would. I'd be pissed.
Yeah, I mean, you just sort of look at it. So it's an interesting hire, but I think it's so unique to the Giants. Like, their last three head coaches are Ben McAdoo, right?
Oh, he was terrible.
He was so bad, so bad. I mean, he looked like, you know, the owner of a certain type of van that doesn't have any windows. Yeah. It was just uncomfortable to watch him.
Just on greasy.
Pat Shurmur, who was a retread, you know, sort of nothing coach. And now Joe Judge. I don't know, man. It's just odd. I mean, again, I wish Joe Judge luck. I hope he has this type of success that Bill O'Brien has had, but I don't have a ton of confidence in it.
Are you surprised how this whole McDaniels thing has played out here? Again, he was supposed to meet with the Giants. He was supposed to meet with the Carolina Panthers. There's word that Belichick wouldn't allow him to go meet with any of these teams until he got his TPS reports done. He goes and meets with the Cleveland Browns yesterday, brings his wife, which is weird. They sit there for 7 hours. They put him back in an Uber. He flies back to New England. They still haven't announced that they who their head coach is going to be yet. Chris Mortensen, ESPN, tweeting just about 10 minutes ago, the Browns have interviewed 8 candidates, obviously including McDaniels, and 3 current playoff coordinators, Eric Bieniemy, Robert Saleh, the defensive coordinator, and Hardo with the 49ers, Kevin Stefanski, offensive coordinator of the Vikings. He also writes, if there's a sleeper, it's Bill's offensive coordinator, Brian Daboll, another former Patriot, who had a strong interview. This is according to sources he's talked to. So all of a sudden, what felt like a lock for McDaniels now feels like he's on the outside looking in on this too.
Yeah, it's really interesting with Josh. You know, I think this is a great opportunity for him. I think he's ready to go. But the Browns, it's like they're just such a dysfunctional franchise. And really, I think the holdup here is this whole Paul D. Podesta situation. He, you know, you mentioned sort of, I think you said earlier, you know, somebody just being, you know, like unkillable. That's D. Podesta there in Cleveland. No matter all the regime change, he seems to ride it out, even though he's not in the building and seems to have the ear of the Haslams. And that's probably what's happening here. D. Podesta knows that if McDaniels gets hired, he's probably out or at least loses all his power. So he's trying to steer the Haslams, Jimmy and D. Haslam, towards some of these other. I mean, I'm sorry. I'm just going to say this right now. And I have a lot of respect for Brian Daboll. The idea that you would hire Brian Daboll over Josh McDaniels is insane. It's insane, especially for a team. The other thing I don't understand with Cleveland is all their candidates other than Josh that are still left have never been an NFL head coach. You just went through that with Freddie Kitchens. You're going to bring in another person that's never been a head coach? If there's ever a team that needs somebody that's not going to have a learning curve and can learn from their mistakes from being an NFL head coach, it's this team that's built to win now with a bunch of egos, including your quarterback, who to me is one of the biggest a-holes in the NFL. So it's like you're going to bring in someone that's never done this before. How's that going to work?
It's one of two things with McDaniels. It's he either is because I think that D. Podesta thing, like if he's still going to be there and have his hand on the team, this baseball analytics nerd who, by the way, until I didn't even know until last week in the pregame when Bert Breer was on with you guys. Yeah. And he said he has done the job from California.
Yes.
Go move to Cleveland, you a-hole.
I do respect that, though, because that's my dream to do this job from California.
Imagine having that kind of power. Like, oh, yeah, no, I'll do my work, but I'll do it from paradise. Screw
yeah.
you. Oh,
boy. I do have respect for that.
But if I'm McDaniels, I don't want to have to deal with that. I want my own guy, or I want to have the say as the GM.
That's true.
Or, boy, this guy's a bad interview. Like, I know a friend of mine, like, that's worked in radio forever, like, he's always been up for jobs and up for jobs and always finds, like, he doesn't end up getting these jobs. It's like, I've just become convinced, like, you must, like, screw up. Did you pass gas in the interview? Did you tell the guy who was interviewing you to go F themselves? Like, you screwed it up somehow. Because if he doesn't get this job, this felt like a lock. And it just feels like now it's turned and he's going to be back here.
That would be great for the Patriots. I mean, that and I honestly feel like this, too, from the Josh standpoint. Again, I know he's from Canton. He loves Baker Mayfield. He wants to coach again. Maybe the dynasty is waning. There's a lot of reasons for him to go. But if you've waited this long and you left the Colts at the altar and the whole idea is like, you know, the second chance could be your last chance and it has to be the perfect place, you really want to go work for these people? I don't know. I mean, yeah. I feel like this is like both, you know, obviously the Browns are having some second thoughts, reservations about Josh. If I were Josh, I'd have some second thoughts, reservations about the Browns because there are some jobs I think that are pretty good that could open next year, including the Chargers. I think the Falcons will be looking for a new coach. Maybe at this point he should just take himself out and say, I'm good.
All right. We have to pause the Patriots conversation for now. I'm sorry if I didn't get to your phone calls when I said I would in this segment. If you want, come back in an hour. But we do have to get to the Sports Hub Celtics show, which we do every Saturday at noon. We'll get to that after the Sports Hub headlines with me.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.